Sådan kan Europa bedre beskytte og modtage flygtninge. For dig, ja, på engelsk, on English, er Pia Rutz, Fieri, Wilfred Buchhorn og Johan Franz, alle fra UNHCR, FN's flygtningehøjkommissariat. Better protecting refugees in the EU and globally. UNHCR's proposal to rebuild trust through better management, partnership and solidarity.
Maybe it is morning for most of us still, even though we're past 12 o'clock. My name is Johan Franz. I represent the regional representation of Northern Europe, based in Stockholm. And I have my colleague Wilfried Buchhorn with me here. And the purpose of this 50 minutes, which I believe is maybe one of the last events of the whole meeting here at the moment, is to again discuss refugee issues, and mostly maybe with a European perspective. And in this context, maybe most of us, or most of you, may be in a dating context. You'll remember late 2015, when asylum seekers were walking along the highways in Denmark. And I think that already last year during Bornholm we discussed these issues, but it still remains an issue. And maybe most importantly at the moment, since the EU is about to revise the asylum rules, it remains very important to ask ourselves and ask each other, what do we want to do? What is a European response? And what can we do And what we're going to present today here is a paper that I hope most of you already have in your hands. And if you don't, there's more of them here. Where UNHCR somehow sets out our views on how we feel the asylum situation in Europe should be handled. But at the same time also recognizing that the asylum situation in Europe also have global implications. That we shouldn't only look within Europe, we should also look at the countries of origin. How can we help them? And some of you, maybe yesterday, took part in the refugee run that was arranged here. Some of you may also have been involved in other EU-related debates about how to get along, go along. And what I feel most, what we agree upon is that we need some kind of common European answer to this challenge. And that's a little bit what we're going to discuss today and how UNHCR looks upon this European challenge. It's about burden sharing, it's about responsibility, and also perhaps about our own responsibility. How can we contribute? And before I hand over the word to Wilfried, I just want to tell everyone that even though I'm speaking English, please do not feel shy to ask questions also in Danish. We have Danish colleagues who are more than ready to translate any kind of question that you would like to ask. And please feel free to just raise your hand and ask questions. Because as you can see, we're UNHCR presenting this proposal. Please challenge us. Please ask questions. What are you thinking here? How do you want this to be done? And with these words, I think I will give the word over to Wilfried.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Johan, and thank you very much for being here today. Apologies, first of all, that I cannot address you in Danish, so I hope we can communicate nevertheless. But Johan said, please ask, please ask the questions in Danish, and I have translation here that will help me with. Thank you in particular, since this is, I think, the end, coming end of very intensive long days, and that you have come up in so significant numbers to show interest for this discussion, which is going back to many of the events we see throughout Europe. Okay, there's some interference with that microphone. Throughout Europe in these days, what we would like to do today with you, and it should be coming a discussion, to test a few ideas we as UNHCR team have thought about and have put on the table and are discussing at the moment, also with politicians, with members of parliament, with civil society throughout basically Europe and the world. Who are we? And I think this question was raised already in the side margins. My name is Wilfried Buchmann. I'm the new deputy regional representative for the regional representation of UNHCR in Northern Europe. Pretty long, complex name. We are in person simpler and easier to access. We have an office in Stockholm covering 8 countries in Northern Europe, from Iceland through the Nordics to the Baltics. We have with us today also great pleasure Pia Pritzkiri, our regional representative. And we as a team work together for Northern Europe. We will soon have also a representation in Denmark in Copenhagen. And one colleague is already with us, Elizabeth, and we will have another colleague soon being placed in the UN city in Copenhagen. So we will all have the chance to find us there and to work with us there. Our interest today is to present you a paper which you have in hand in English. It's called The Better Protection Refugees in Europe and Globally. We have made a Danish translation. And I would like to take the first sort of chance to give you a few thoughts, hopefully provoking thoughts also, which then can lead us in an exchange debate. Please, at any stage, interrupt me, raise your finger so I think that we have a chance to really work around those issues which are of most interest. Why actually have we done this as UNHCR to put such a paper on the table, to think about Europe and how Europe could do better in Europe and globally? And the reason is very obvious, as Johan referred to, and you all remember the year 2015 and 16, years in Europe of crisis, where we have seen that the European common European asylum system was basically falling apart. International reactions, there was no preparedness to respond to the number of arrivals. Many called those arrivals, the numbers, as an emergency. We will take here up a few questions, because when you look at Europe, of course, more than 1 million people entering Europe is many, many people for 1 or 2 countries alone, or 3 countries alone. But for Europe, for the European Union, an entity with 500 million inhabitants in a very still good shape when we look at other parts of the world, I think it should not be really called an emergency. It was a management crisis, and it was a way of dealing with things, and it brought to light things we all were very familiar with and knew. Number one, that the current asylum acquis, the legal norms which the EU member states, with the exception of Denmark because he opted out, have given themselves to implement basically a common European asylum system, that those norms existed on paper, but in reality were not implemented. So you did not find reception conditions in all European countries. You have no proper asylum system established in all European countries. You had no response in the moment of crisis, in the moment of need in all European countries. So in that moment, this European, common European asylum system, which we known under the acronym SEAS, basically appeared and fall apart. It was a fair weather system, as many European politicians called it at that moment. At that very moment, of course, we were looking at also the next step, how and what is needed to prevent this from happening again. And I think that is the moment now where we also are, that the numbers are going down. I think at least in Europe we have a moment to rethink and basically look at what has gone wrong then. And the Commission took this opportunity and presented last year proposals for a new, what is called NORCEAS reform, basically turning some of the regulations into directives, and or the other way around, the directive into regulations, and also strengthening the role of the agencies. There are these two agencies which in our context often are important mentioned: the European Asylum Support Office, which is based in Malta, has at the moment a mandate which is sort of very much a supporting mandate, cooperation mandate, but they have no teeth really to show that what they develop, the good documents, the good training materials and the capacities are really being used also in member states. And when it was the moment in Italy and Greece to call on member states through the EASO structures to deploy experts, many member states did, also Denmark, but they were simply not enough. And in that moment, of course, that mechanism didn't respond. So the idea with the European Asylum Support Office is to turn it into a European Asylum Agency, which then really has also some powers to support preparedness, to look at the guidelines, standards in the European Union, make reports which show them the weaknesses and also what has been achieved, and come in, most importantly, with help and support. Targeted support to the different member states, to the systems, to get things go back. That was one of the lessons which is translated in this new proposal for the European agency. Second agency, some consider even more important, is Frontex, or the European Border and Coast Guard Agency, which is in charge of the external EU borders and also now has a Coast Guard component. In the context of Frontex, the discussions have already seen the results and have strengthened the agency. They have more capacities now, they have more financial resources, there's a better way of responding. And we see also, when we look at the external European border today, compared to 2015 and 16, you do not see any more arrivals of human beings, be it refugees or migrants, who are entering the European Union without being identified, security checked, fingerprinted. That was one of the big, big concerns in 15-16, and understandably for the population who are basically seeing thousands a day of entering the European Union, and nobody takes charge, nobody is really there to make sure that everybody is registered, identified, and we find out who is applying for asylum and who is not. And those who are not, I think there are different rules, of course, to be applied. As we speak today, this external border is at the moment better guarded and protected. We could still say also protection sensitive, because the people come still, and they can reach European external borders. They can still apply for asylum, and asylum applications are being still taken. However, we all know when it comes to the Greek islands, then the main focus is on admissibility and return to Turkey, and not on the application per se as such. However, also though, and we can talk about details later, things have changed, because the reality simply has proven that this model doesn't work so easily. So there is a moment of also in Greece now that the Greek authorities, together with European support, looking at the eligibility procedure, and persons can also enter into the eligibility procedure, the formal procedure, to apply for asylum in the EU. So this first step of having an external border which is secure and guarded and still protection sensitive, this would be our key point, has been achieved. What is missing now, of course, are the other steps. So when you look at Italy at the moment, the numbers of arrival is increasing there. In all other parts, it's decreasing. But to Northern Africa, so Libya, you see every day, people are coming. The Italian system at the moment has difficulties to deal with these numbers in terms of processing them. They are registered. They are basically, you can make an application for asylum if people want. But then the processing part is the complicated part. And this is one of the parts also in our paper which we are going to address and make some proposals how Europe, how member states, how we all together could make the system simpler and better functioning, which is in the interest of the countries but also of the refugees to be identified very early on and be given access to protection. Before we move into the EU, and this is a concern which I think is especially when we talk to politicians in Europe but globally also, of course, Europe alone will not be able to cope with the situation. This is why we have actually a cooperation among globally the states. And we are very happy that indeed last year, in September 2016, all governments of the world, basically, and the United Nations committed, reaffirmed their commitment to international refugee protection in the New York Declaration. It's a very interesting declaration to read. It sets out very, very encouraging commitments and the understanding this is a global issue, an issue we cannot solve in one country, not in one region. We have to stand together to do this, and we have to work towards, I think, working in a different way. Not independently, each agency, each country, bilaterally for themselves, but together address the situation. You will see on Monday, we are celebrating World Refugee on the 20th of June, on Tuesday, but on Monday we are releasing our global trend report, again, sort of taking stock and on the situation worldwide. We have higher number of persons being displaced for reasons of being fleeing war or persecution. These are not migrants in the sense of looking for better opportunities to live, which I think personally is extremely understood by all, but I think there need to be different regimes in place. But these are refugees and persons fleeing persecution and violence. So those numbers are not going down. We also do not see solutions. We do not see conflicts ending. We do not see humanitarian basic sustainable solutions where less people would need to flee and more people could return. This is out of the hands of our humanitarian work. The UNHCR, the refugee agency, has a humanitarian mandate only. We cannot work if we don't work politically, but petition needs to be done. So engagement is needed there also. And our former boss, Antonio Guterres, the High Commissioner for Refugees, is now Secretary General of the United Nations. His focus is indeed bringing the world together to work on solutions on the political field as well. As long as those solutions are not there, we need to give refugees a chance to keep being integrated in their society, to support societies, to live a normal life, to grow, as we say, have access to education. Do not waste these times, these years in a refugee camp, being isolated from the population. This is the new approach you have been hearing from yesterday, and there's a lot we can talk about there also and add in terms of information if you are interested to do so. But our approach brings together the regions of origin, the transit countries which need to be supported, the development aid which needs to support humanitarian aid, and the European. Today we would like to look at what Europe can do and what we can do in Europe to support this solution approach. If we look at that and have sort of in mind the pictures from 1516, I mentioned already one first important step has been basically achieved. So there is a more secure border and more also secure in terms of protection sensitive. For us, and this is part of our proposals and actually the first moment when we say what the EU could do better, is to create a better manageable asylum system, a simpler system which is also fairer and faster. And one way to do this is to look into a procedure which should take place at the area where people enter the European Union and in the external borders, and establish there what we call a registration and processing center or unit, which is able to very quickly identify everybody, security check everybody, register everybody, ideally in a common European system. So the information taken in Italy and Greece, or in Latvia or Poland, should be also available to other authorities in the European Union so that there is an exchange and not a doubling of information and confusion, of course, which opens the door also for abuse. That common registration system with the security component would basically bring the understanding who applies for asylum and who not. And those who apply for asylum, the qualified authorities through the European Asylum Agency supported member states will look at how those cases manifestly founded cases. Are those people coming, for instance, from Syria, from other areas, Iraq, where there are obviously reasons to believe that these people need protection, our protection here? Or are those cases rather cases where the claim is weak, coming from countries where we have a very low number of recognitions? This important first decision will allow to have those cases who are, we would consider as manifestly unfounded, where there is not yet a reason to think about protection, but we still give a chance to look in these cases, done in a procedure organized in those countries by qualified staff members, qualified officials, and also this appeals procedure. But this is done together in a way that it can be done quickly and the result would be available quickly. So with all the legal safeguards, it would be possible to identify those who would rather have to return from where they come from, then to be distributed in the European Union to another member state. All the others, where there is basically the first impression and the indication that this is a well-founded play for asylum, for protection, those persons can either be granted protection immediately on the spot, and then they are refugees and they are treated like that, or and if the country receiving those is under pressure, if their number is too high, a mechanism would be established to share the responsibility for those processings with other countries. And that is what at the moment does not exist. So this is why, for instance, Italy and Greece have been calling on other member states for help in all areas, including in this sharing area. For us, just to make that point before we move on, it is very important that at the external EU border, we are not just looking at admissibility, which is basically the question, do we let the person in or not? This is a concept which is leading to shifting responsibilities to other countries, which are not better suited to deal with the situation, which don't have the capacities yet. I think looking at Libya, I think is no question, but even other countries in the region, the European Union is not surrounded by countries who have similar stable or similar developed asylum system. I keep the word stable for later, than the European Union. So in that sense, it doesn't make sense to do that. And also globally, if we look at the global situation, 84%, more than 80% of those seeking protection, in need of protection, are still outside the European Union. So we need to see this as an element also of global solidarity and sharing responsibility. But this is what the European Commission's proposal currently proposes, to have an admissibility procedure which would lead to the consequence like we see in the EU-Turkey context, but also in other contexts. It is simply not realistic at the moment. It's not to say in principle it could work, but it requires certain support preparations in these other countries. And in that context, also we need to mention from the European Union then much more involvement in resettlement and legal pathways. Because you cannot just keep people in other parts of the world and support them there with the communities. If you look at Lebanon, it simply is not possible for Lebanon, as a country with the population it has, to integrate 1 million. Right? It is not sustainable. So in order to give refugees in Lebanon also a chance, some of them have to be given this chance somewhere else, and that requires resettlement, legal pathways, and other means. But just to come back to the European Union, so our system would at that very early stage identify those, with the help of other member states, organize the procedures, ensure the quality, and then if there's a need for those, then the country is having any basically arrivals. There is what we call a solidarity mechanism. And I think in that context, I will just throw this out here. You probably all have heard about this EU relocation scheme. It's called the EU Emergency Relocation Scheme. It was an idea in 2015 in September, the second decision taken to say we the European Member States, we relocate to 160,000 asylum seekers from Greece and Italy, to help Greece and Italy, to other member states, to allow those countries basically to be better able to cope with the situation. We all know it has not been a success story straight away. It has been extremely difficult, but we also, I can see, if we look at the numbers, we have 20,000, at the moment the European Union records 20,000 persons have been transferred in less than 2 years. 25,000 in total places have been offered by other member states. And when we look at some member states, for instance Finland or the Baltics, it has worked fabulously. They have been able to relocate the numbers of those in their quota, while other member states have not relocated a single person. So I take here up the word to say it's not the system to be blamed, it is the political also commitment to implement it. And this goes with everything which happens in the community, be it in the local context, be it in the national context, but also in the European context. You can adopt and you can make laws as long as you want. If they are not translated and implemented, it will not show results. We think the relocation mechanism and what is also called the hotspot approach, which was a bit like what I was outlining before, all the resources to some of the border areas where the most people arrive, and organize a proper procedure, of course, with humanitarian support. And this is always the first to come in. And also that was not always available, but that we can talk also about how to do this better, but make then the procedure work, and then we know who's there and who is who, and also who would be responsible. We think if the European Union would look at what we call sort of a reference share, look at the size basically of the population, the economic sort of situation, the economy power, the question of how many people, refugees, have already been accepted in these countries. We could design sort of a share, and the moment basically, a share which everybody, every country would have to take. The moment that share is reached, and you exceed that share, then a mechanism would kick in, which could kick in on a voluntary basis or on a compulsory basis, whatever is preferred. Most countries have problems with a mandatory mechanism. And then the mechanism would identify those already who can then be transferred to other countries. So that would be the sharing based on the experience and lessons learned from the relocation mechanism also at the moment. There are now what is called protocols established, there are standard operating procedures. There are thousands of EU officials have been trained on how to do this work. So now actually, if it's wanted, it could work much better and would be part of that solution. Before we come further to distribution, I think one area for UNHCR which we want to flag here, which for us is extremely important, is the family links and the family concept. And I will explain you why. When you look at family in the context, at the current definition of family, it's very narrow. It's absolutely too narrow. It basically is the core family members, father and mother, and minor children. And then it has to be a family already when they left, basically when they fled. So that doesn't work. And I've been in Greece and also Italy talking to refugees arrivals there. And of course you explained when we had the relocation, so there will be a family criteria and you can go to meet your family. However, when your family is just a brother or a sister, that would not count. And then people were looking at you and say, well, why? Since when is my brother, my sister not part of my family? So our definition of family in the legal context is just too narrow, to basically justice here, to also the legitimate interests. So one of the driving factors of irregular movements, of people moving around, is finding their family members and reuniting themselves. Which we know is still, of course, possible because the European Union hopefully is and still remains an open space. But there is, of course, a need to organize this better. So if we address the family links heads on, there will be less reasons for people to move. And there is more expectations also for refugees to understand our system and say, well, if you have arrived in Italy and Greece, just to stay in the examples, you have arrived in Europe. You are safe. Knowing, of course, that not all the conditions in Italy and Greece were and still are in place the way we want them to be. They are much better now, and Greece has made enormous progress, and also Italy. But there needs to be an understanding for refugees. They have to help us also to help them. So if they arrive from the European Union, their applications are taken serious and being processed. They need to trust us that the system is well organized. And also that if there is a transfer needed, family will be always taken into consideration and other meaningful links. So this is important in the communication and to avoid that. I think we have situations where today people are being relocated to one country, moving to the other, they get lost, they're becoming irregular, and it's all very, very difficult. One area in this context also, of course, it's very important is child protection. There are numbers of children independently, unaccompanied, separate children on the move, which are record high, which is concerning. I think primarily should be for the parents, for the family, a big concern, but it's for all of us a concern because especially those who are dealing, have to work with these children, are in a very challenging position. So children have been told certain things which do not match the reality, where they would be best protected, where they should go, and all these situations will lead basically or have led to an enormous protection gap which is open to exploitation and all other forms of horrible things which young human beings should never happen. We propose to establish a separate child protection system from the asylum system. Not every child and every youth coming to Europe is an asylum seeker. First and most importantly, the best interest of the child needs to be looked into and determined. And from there on, solution can be organized, better organized than before. Just a few more points to move to the whole context and to have time for discussions. With this sort of solidarity mechanism, we would then have basically a situation if in case of a crisis, in case of a development, there is a sharing and of responsibility. And we have another element which we call an incentive both for the states and also for the refugees. If they are allocated to a country where they are granted protection, they should be given a chance to integrate. But that doesn't mean that they have to stay forever in these countries. They should have a chance to look like European citizens have today for job opportunities in other parts of Europe in a very legal way. And if they find a job, and if that other state is willing to accept that refugee on their territory in the job, why not give that person the chance to work there? So we propose already after 6 months to give that sort of opportunity. And yes, if you lose the job, if you become then a liability to the country in the social system, you would go back to that country which granted you protection. So it's like with us EU citizens, you are not allowed to stay in another European Union and benefit from the social welfare there. You are allowed to work there and to establish your life, but not basically to contribute, of course. So this is an element which is important also for the countries to understand. The other element is to reduce the number of irregular movers. And if we come basically to the last and many say most important point, it's the point of integration. Because once everything is done with the asylum system, and this is very clearly for UNHCR maybe a position which is perceived as new, but we always were of your opinion. If the asylum system has taken a decision in a fair and good procedure with all the safeguards, and the procedure is negative, and no court has changed that procedure, then it has to be returned. It cannot be that we invest in asylum system, that states invest in asylum system and make efforts, and at the end of that process, the decision is not taken serious. Then we don't need to make the process at all. So that has to be, if it's negative and it's properly assessed, with all the safeguards through all the court system approved, then we need to look at return, ideally and preferably voluntary return. But if the decision is positive, which is in the European Union, I think more than 60% are granted protection. So that's why we clearly say we're talking about the refugee crisis. It's not a migrant crisis. The number of protections is very high. Then the same efforts need to be made with integration. And integration primarily is the support to the communities which have to take that sort of step to integrate and welcome a person. But it's a two-way street. It's not only about welcoming. It's also about obligations on both sides. And also the refugees have to understand that there are rules and values to be respected in that community, the language to be learned. All this is part of this package, including qualification, access to labor market, etc. So this is sort of part of our idea to develop something which could become more realistic in sense of being better managed, better identify protection. We have put this on the table just as the last thought with the Commission to the Member States. They are negotiating currently these EU proposals. Those proposals have many of those elements which we also have, and we pick them up, they're also in their proposals, but they don't go the full way. They stop short. And that leads to the fact that we are afraid that whatever comes out of this process, and we still hope something comes out, because only Europe together would be able to solve it, is still enough, but we doubt that. So we would call for a rethinking and looking at what is it we jointly want to achieve, and in line with that to take sort of some steps which help all in Europe to make that move and basically come to a system which is then part of the global system, also a standard setting to other parts of the world. Because this, as a last thought, Europe is still looked at by other world sort of communities, which, as I said, host the majority of refugees. If Europe goes below international standards and shows that they are not willing to live up to the commitments made recently in New York and go low, then this could have an export value, which also leads to erosion of protection systems around the world. So the key message here is, let's try to find together a solution. We are stronger together, we are better together, we can do better. It's in the interest of all those who need and desperately need protection out of this world, but it's also in the interest of the states who offer this protection, and we are extremely grateful, I think, to those states, to Denmark, but also to all other states who contribute in their efforts every day to the population, to these joint efforts, but there are areas where we can all do better, and I think it's worthwhile to do better. Thank you very much.
Okay, the intention was then to open up for a few questions. Please do not hesitate, do not feel shy. Good. Here we have a volunteer.
Yeah, I'm going to pop the difficult question right away. I mean, there's no doubt that what you're talking for, a common European system for receiving and accommodating refugees and their needs, is what everybody is talking about. But I mean, in the political debate in our own country, there's immense level of hypocrisy and lack of realism. I mean, everybody talks about European solution, but nobody wants it. I mean, Denmark clearly it's not a part of European solution. Still, Danish politicians ask and argue for a European solution or European system. I mean, it is hypocrisy at the highest level. So, and I know, and I think that Denmark, in this respect, is not more hypocritical than other countries or politicians in other countries. So actually, this is more or less a European state of mind, maybe with the German government as an exception. But do you have any approach how to massage the political systems, how to make this message come through, how to reconcile the sense of that proposal to the sentiment in other populations that they are under threat or their privileges are endangered by the invasion of refugees? I mean, there are a lot of things at stake here, but we need to address the political level. And so far, excellent proposal, but probably very little support.
Thank you very much for that question, and I think you can imagine this is also in our own heads, honestly. I think we are breaking our heads around this. What can we do? One effort was we decided to come here also, I think, to talk to those who are, for us, most important in this, because you spoke about the fear. Indeed, I have this feeling also, I think, many politicians are driven by fear. And I asked myself, where does the fear come from? Is it the fear they assume their own population is sort of sharing or transferring? And then the other point, we always say, well, if that would be the case, even if that would be the case, and I doubt that is the case, because looking at the volunteerism we're seeing in all European countries at every given moment, there's so many organizations and people helping and working towards that. Maybe it's also the media to a certain extent which sort of makes that sort of a much bigger issue than it actually is. But number one, I think when we talk about fear, we need to regain trust and rebuild trust. So these proposals are those, and we hope that some of this will sort of resonate also with the politicians. Then we need to see that we need leadership. It cannot be when you're sort of sitting in a car on the motorway and you don't trust the driver, I would also be afraid. So the fear often transpires also from the leader to the other part in the population. So there needs to be leadership, and people need to take a strong decision. We mentioned some politicians do that, others less. So it's encouragement there. And for us, it's basically not to give up hope. We believe, and especially the September last year gave us sort of very, very strong new energy to say, well, if there is a commitment at this New York level, why shouldn't there be commitment in Copenhagen and in Berlin and Bratislava and in Vilnius and Tallinn? So I think there is a way of using this and try to turn this around, but with the population. I think this has to be rooted there, and we need to show results and communicate results. I can communicate on relocation and say it's a total failure. But I can also say, the glasses are full. They manage 25,000. So let's do better. At least we have now a formula, so it can spin the other way around, but it requires this energy to make that happen. And I agree with you, there are moments where I feel frustrated too, and looking at the European level, absolutely, I think the main stumbling block at the moment is the solidarity mechanism, which in the new Dublin, there is an element proposed. The discussions are at the moment on what is called the Maltese proposal, which already builds a bridge. So you can basically 50% of your share should be physical, like human beings being transferred. But the other 50% can be anything else, can be money, can be experts, can be capacities you allocate. So there are ways to strike a compromise. If this will not be reached, you will have a July, we will see the July European Council political level, where then the heads of governments meet. If this fails at that level, we are afraid of the alternatives. Number one, for us, there are no suitable alternatives. But if it fails throughout then the further presidency, there might be a moment in Europe where they think about the Australian model. We all have heard about it, we all know what it is. It is not in the context of global solidarity sharing, not in line with international standards, etc. So the alternatives are so strikingly wrong that we think we need to put the energy now in front load as possible and still try to turn this around. It's not lost. I think there are so many good people out there, and we felt very inspired also today in our tent when you came, and people are interested and showing interest. So let's try to use that. And if it fails in the end, we all will have to live with the realities, but still we have, it's time really to stand up for it. Not clear enough, I hope at least a bit helpful. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Just one little question. I thought that, the, let's say, the Latvia first denied to take some. I haven't heard that they took some. You said that. What happened?
It's a good. I think we had also this impression that the Central European governments usually are seen as denying. Latvia, maybe they at some point in the past. There were some of these forces, but what they did is actually establishing a good relocation scheme and, more importantly, looking at integration. Yeah. We in our region, we are impressed by what Latvia, what Estonia and also Lithuania have done. They have started to put in support schemes, access to labor market facilitation, volunteer groups to mentoring, negotiations with communities, reception facilities. A lot of work still to be done. I'm not saying it's all perfect, but nobody, none of us is perfect, not any system is perfect, but the efforts are there. Our colleagues in Central Europe, who are dealing with Slovakia and Hungary, of course, and Bulgaria, they are coming now to the region to see what they have done, actually, in the Baltics. The Baltics use the relocation as a starting point to say, well, there are real, genuine refugees coming now to the countries, which were not there before, because people often just went through, they applied for asylum, then they disappeared. Now they stay, at least for a while. It's still not good enough in a sense that people, that they all stay, but then we also have to communicate. So we have just now had a first family returning from Germany to Latvia. We're trying with the authorities, with the civil society, to make those people not roll out the red carpet, but give them a chance, fair chance, to integrate, reintegrate in Latvia and take opportunities. So it's possible in those countries, and if those examples become more knowledge, I think more known, then others may have also more courage. But we all know also all this is linked on around the question of work and labor market and can I really earn my living? Everybody wants that. Most of the people don't want to live on social benefits and spend their life there. So if we take that serious, I think the private sector, the companies, and there are many here at this event, but in many other parts, they have a responsibility too. So in a joint way to work on this, and not as a charity model, it should be business. It is in the interest of both sides and solid. And I think there is a way to make that happen if we more innovation, more creative on this. And I think Denmark is a country full of creative, innovative people. So if we use that, I think Europe is a region and the world, I would say, has many, many creative people. So if we build on these resources, we could probably make better steps forward.
Any more views, thoughts? Comments?
Critical, I mean, what do you think? Are there sort of flaws or gaps in the system we have proposed?
Yeah, is this plan negotiated with the EU, Commission? Is that the plan that EU Commission wants to go all around Europe?
I think we have good question. I think we have been talking with the Commission throughout the process. And when we look at this, when you meet the UNHCR and the EU and the member states, whoever was, we look at the year 1560, it was the European Commission, the European Union putting up the money for a lot of things. The problem is nobody was really prepared in Europe to deal with this type of crisis. So nobody had the tents, the reception capacity, the facilities. This then came partly from the UN also, which we were surprised that it would be needed in Europe, I think worldwide. Okay, now lessons were learned. So we, in this context, continued discussions. Then we had hoped the Commission with their proposals in May would go that road. We think there are many, many very important positive developments in these proposals, and we encourage member states to look at that, but some are missing. So I think to answer your question, we have been discussing this, but it's not 100% adopted by the Commission. They have their own plan. Now there's a moment where the negotiations are at a stage where, well, some say they are lost in details, others say they lost orientation. We say, well, there's a moment to take a step back, go back to the drawing board and reorganize this in a way how we see this going. What do we want to achieve? And maybe then it's easier among the states to agree on which article should be phrased in which way. Because that's the current problem. When you have a regulation, then you have to have actually the EU law is directly to be implemented. So you cannot fiddle around anymore with the words. When you have a directive, you have a transposition process, and then sometimes we saw different ways, there were more options. So it is difficult also for lawmakers. But if all have the same goal in mind, the vision, it should be simpler, fairer, I think it can work. And we still hope so. And I think we will see now in July what happens at the Council. And then basically, maybe there's a moment in the summer to think, reflect, and with the Estonian presidency that this can take it on. We will make the call. The High Commissioner, it goes to these meetings, is in these discussions, we ourselves. And I think we need all of you to talk about this almost every day in some of the corners, because it is also building trust and rebuilding our own sort of capacity to deal with and find solution. And I think, as I said, I'm still optimistic that this is possible. And if not, we can then have our moments afterwards, maybe next year, this event, and then everything is different, but we still hope it will work. Thank you.
And maybe as a concrete reference, you should have there in the Annex 1 of the report a little bit a picture as to which shows in what ways the UNHCR proposal is different from the EU one. So if you look in the Annex of the report, you should find that. For easy reference.
There's a colorful last page with yellow, blue, and green lines. Yeah, so it's no green, I think. So
interesting. Unless we have. There we have another hand.
Thank you for the presentation. I would like to maybe ask you to elaborate a little bit more on this. You were mentioning for the children and unaccompanied minors that you're planning to maybe improve that support a bit more. And yeah, if you wanted to elaborate on that, is it the idea to maybe improve the coordination to the existing service deliveries in each country, or are you setting up health services?
Thank you so much for that question, because I realize I might have contributed to confusion. Indeed, I think we think, as UNHCR, but I think many others as well, and we seem to be having the same view, there are enough rules and regulations and proposals, common ground, things, how child protection should be organized. However, what is missing is like to reorganize a bit the system, the furniture, in a way that the existing system can better protect the child's interest. And of course, that starts with the registration identification at the very top. Then, if that would include a best interest assessment from the very beginning, if you front load and put the right resources there, then it's easier to say, well, does this child need to go into an asylum procedure? Or is it maybe not in the interest of the child to do that, and better to train the family members, find connections where the child can go back to? And it doesn't mean that the child then has always to stay in Denmark. It could be another country where family members are, where the situation is okay. So these things cannot come at the end of the asylum procedure when, of course, then it's already many, many other steps have failed on that road. So I think their best interest assessment at the very beginning, guardians to be appointed at the very beginning, so that the young, sort of the youth or the child or the unaccompanied minor is not alone, has a qualified sort of support, and also like good parents gives guidance and orientation. And if you're alone in such a situation, like you come from another part of the world, and the only guidance you get is through the social media, through smuggling networks and whatever things. There is a need for European Union, for members and for all of us to give that guidance to in the right way and try to organize it. With guardians, with legal representatives, with child reception systems, age assessment is of course an issue. I think if all these things which exist are organized in a better way, it will be clear which children have to go through the asylum procedure and where the others are. But at the moment, what we see in many countries is when you are under 18, you are often not granted protection, but you are left basically in limbo until you grow 18 and then you go home. This is so traumatizing for, especially now Afghanistan, from Afghanistan, because it's a big group of young people coming, because they know they have no perspective. And why keep me 2 years in that limbo? So in a way, to turn this around, to start in the beginning better, it will not be every child in need of asylum protection in Europe. Not every child will be able to stay here. But this is where communication also needs to be done with communities in Afghanistan, in Iraq. And this is where UNHCR started a little thing with communication with communities, telling the real stories, using social media. But much more needs to be done. I think also, again, creativity. If there are trustworthy sort of counterparts among these communities who can talk to children and families in Afghanistan not to send children on such a road, or North Africa, Sub-Saharan Africa, something can happen. But and here, I think the circle closes. We have seen that now with the new way of working together in the EU, but I think also, in the UN, among the UN agencies, but also hopefully in the EU, and globally, there is more opportunities to create conditions in regions where their refugees are mainly hosted, for instance, Ethiopia at the moment, to give access to education, to give access to jobs, to become qualified. If that would be combined with a parallel system of sponsorships to learn something in other parts of the world, there are sort of future opportunities created. It could help to reduce the number of those who decide to take life-risking journeys and put their hand into the hands of smugglers. There will be, however, always people coming. So this is my firm conviction. There are no walls, no fences you can build which are as high and as dangerous that people would not try to overcome them. So let's not go down that road. Let's rather create different conditions and things. Thank you.
Hey, I think maybe with those words we will have to soon round up. I want to thank everybody for coming. Do you, Wilfried, want to say some concluding words? Or?
I spoke enough, I just say thank you to all of you. I wish you a wonderful ending of this inspiring days and weekend. And please feel free, we are available, of course, on all the social media, on the web. I think we are sitting in Stockholm, but Elizabeth is here. Soon we have other person also here. So we are happy to continue this dialogue and discussion. We need also your feedback on our work, what you think we can do better and differently. And I think this is where this joint comes in. And this is sort of the last word. I mean, we have started in the region to build what we call a five-year, multi-year, multi-partner plan. We take that serious. We want you as partners there and understand with you where should we go in our region, Northern Europe, where can we be most, basically, have most impact, and where we can jointly maybe coordinate and strategize a bit better than we have done in the past. So this could help us. Thank you so much.
You can see the paper by a link on this website, arnehansen.net/dialogue. For samme dialogside, altså www.arnehansen.net/dialog, og søg på FN flygtningepolitik, ligger der altså sammen med denne lydoptagelse også et link til en dansksproget udgave af FN's forslag til EU flygtningepolitik sammen med den engelsksprogede originaludgave.